I have this question. Could you please tell us a little about the gift of self-giving program? Well, I don't know if you were going to have a conference with Lisa, but anyway, what I can tell you about that is the following. I don't know if any one of you is in Pinterest. Well, Pinterest is like some kind of a social media, and I know Pinterest because that's the only that I know. I've never been in Facebook, I've never been in Instagram or anything else. But anyway, there are some channels, or I don't know how you call it, boards in Pinterest that they just have this checklist that is like, oh, this is a good Pinterest board and it's recommended and it's been with us for a number of years, so it's okay. So in a certain way, this self-giving program is partly for you, but it's most of us for the others. It's a moment in which you're saying, you know, I've been in Rayum Christi for a number of years. I know what that is. I know what has done for me, Rayum Christi. And I believe, first, that Rayum Christi is a path towards sanctity. And second, it is the path that I've chosen in my way to sanctity. That is obviously sanctity, the opening of your tornado circles and letting yourself be more loved by God. So basically that's it. I don't know if that's clear, because one thing could be like, and I know maybe one or two of you are not even in Rayum Christi, so it could be Gelfa self-giving is like, get ready because Rayum Christi is going to ask from you much more, you know? And the thing is that I know myself, and I know other members of Rayum Christi, and we are doing much less than what we used to do before because we are tired and we're getting old, no? I mean, the years pass, and you can't do just as much, no? And it's not that I'm getting old, but my husband is also getting old. So he needs more care from my side. And so it cannot be get ready to do more. It's like, what do you mean by doing more? Or am I not trying hard enough to be saint already? Or I don't know. It's like, I think I'm trying. I mean, I know how weak I am. But I guess that's part of the experience. But it is a moment in which you say, you know, I think this is okay. I've made a life experience with this, and I think it is recommendable. It is a good thing. And I think that, speaking realistically, that's what it is. It's kind of I like it. So I think that's it. Because after reading the literature, because Lisa sent me a lot of literature, you can say a lot of things about it and you can go deeper into it. But in few words, that's what it's saying. And it's a very beautiful witness when you are at a triduum or spiritual exercises. Because I saw that in New Jersey when Mary Rowe and two more, and Victoria, the section director, and someone else did that. And it's like, wow, the other women, they just saw it as a very natural thing. And they said, wow, I don't know exactly what they did, but it sounds like it was nice. And, you know, I also had not heard about the Gelfa self-giving before that. So it's like you have Mary Rowe telling me, I know it was Victoria telling me, no, you have to lead the prayer for self-giving which is done after the Mass. And I was like, okay, let's make it very solemn. And it's like, I don't know what's going on here. but I was very edified too. And I was not thinking that they were doing anything else, but just to tell us, like, I'm very happy to be a member of Rayum Christi. Okay. So once we said that, I need to tell you that we are starting the next week. So recapitulating the dynamic, we went through principle and foundation, and so that we kind of realize what this is all about, ideally, no? Because we can do 30 days spiritual exercises like St. Ignatius planned them to be at the beginning. But realize what this is all about, and then understanding that, I see that there's a lot of incoherence about me in this. So I feel sorry for it, but at the same time, I realize God's mercy, and this conversion takes place. And after experiencing this mercy, this renewal, so to say, the new creation, the new me that comes out of that grave, of that holy sepulcher, then I say, well, the only thing that I want to do now, Jesus, is to be with you. Like, what are you going to do? And Jesus says, well, I'm just going to go into the world. I'm just going to incarnate. I'm just going to be a human being. It's like, okay, I want to go with you. Let's go. And then we are following Jesus in his life. And obviously, we just went as far as Epiphany, so Jesus is still a baby. We haven't even seen him as a grown-up man. But, you know, that's as much time as we have. So it's just a little foretaste of following Jesus in all the mysteries of his life. And we have to skip forward, fast forward, to his passion. And now it's his passion. And the passion is like a week in its own, on her own, because it's a very special moment of redemption. And it demands from us a different fruit of what was demand of joining Jesus in his everyday life, which is also a very beautiful fruit. It's just like committing my life to Jesus. But now it is like it's being tested. And so the fruit of this week is really to share his feelings, to feel compassion for our Lord Jesus Christ. And I don't know, maybe you have made the experience, or you've had the experience of feeling sorry about yourselves. And because you see your crosses that are real for all of us. But then there comes a moment, and I think this should be one of the fruits of this week, which lasts two meditations. One of the fruits of this week is just to see that all those crosses that I had, they were not mine. They were his. And I was just going with him through them. And they were his because he took them from me. He said, everything that is painful for you, it's mine. I'll take it. I'll take the bullet for you. But of course, if I'm taking the bullet, I want you to understand that I am suffering, that I am going through a difficult moment. And it would, because I love you so much, it would be a great comfort for me that you're there with me. And then you feel the cross. You experience the cross. But it's not yours. It's his. And then you kind of understand that your cross is just a little part of the cross that he carries on his shoulders. And then you feel more love towards him. And you say, Jesus, you're not just my hero. You're the hero of the church. You're the hero of humanity. I love you so much. I want to help you so much. I want to be your Simon of Cyrene. I want to be your Veronica. I want to be like Mary, be at your side in a faithful way. So all these and many other more beautiful fruits that you will experience in your heart that I cannot even describe, the things that you will experience in your heart, not just in this spiritual exercises, but in your spiritual life, or the fruits that you've already experienced, and we could just put in this list, that's what this week is all about. And you know, in every triduum or spiritual exercises, you have to make choices. And I, as a preacher of this triduum, I've taken the choice to put more emphasis, to put more weight on the principle and foundation. you will see that we had a lot of meditations about principle and foundation. Because I thought, since this is the first triduum or spiritual exercises that we have together as chaplain of New York, Connecticut, Tri-State, and as New York, Connecticut, Tri-State, I thought it was very important that we understand the spiritual language that we're talking, so that we can understand each other, and that we can understand what's the language in the shape of foundation that God is speaking to us. And then I hope that as years go by, well, that our letters are at least for 3 years, so I still have 2 more years. Yes, so I hope that we can go deeper into other mysteries of the life of Jesus Christ. I don't know if I'm going to preach the Triduum or spiritual exercises next year, but I'm really considering to prepare spiritual exercises based on the mysteries of the Rosary. And so, like, to put them together, it's something that I am going over. And so in 1 year or in 2 years, of course, we're going to talk more about different mysteries of the life of Christ. But this foretaste of the Passion of the Christ that we're going to have today, in this meditation and in the next meditation, is just, again, don't consider that it's everything. I mean, I'm sure that you won't. But it's a foretaste, and my desire is that we reach the fruit. Like, because the fruit is not in the quantity of meditations. It's just to know, Jesus, let me feel. I mean, let me share your feelings, to feel, to increase my love to you by feeling this compassion, to know what a hero you are in that way. And the first meditation about the Last Supper is for me very important. I mean, just the exercises are just like lacking if they don't have the Last Supper. But it's also like super important, the meditation about Gethsemane and the meditation about the Calvary. And we just have two. So I'm just going to put a little bit of Last Supper and a little bit of Gethsemane here, trying to make you see what is important. And the little bit of Last Supper that I am trying to put is something that I told you recently. It was the theme of our series of Morning of Reflection. And it's the washing of the feet. We had a morning of reflection not long ago. It was not the last morning of reflection, but the morning of reflection before that. It was about the washing of the feet. And if you were there, be just patient, because I think it's very important that we know that. Because something very important is being touched here, which is charity. It's the virtue of charity explained. So in that morning of reflection, I was telling you that the context of the Last Supper is a context of someone who is dying and is giving us his testament. Everything that he owns, everything that he is important for him, he is just kind of sharing it before he dies. So that's the solemnity of the moment. Jesus is dying and is like, okay, just think. My father is dying, or my mother is dying, and since it's the moment she is in bed, like in her last moments, and she calls you, okay, so she calls me. She has to tell me something important because she's about to die, no, and that's exactly the context. Jesus is like, he's calling us, and he wants to tell us something that is very important. Now, because Jesus knows that we're kind of slow to understand what he is saying, he makes it very visual. So he says, okay, we're going to have the Last Supper. So he takes off his clothes, he puts a towel on, and he starts washing the feet of his disciples. Like, that's what he's trying to tell them. And just try to put yourself in the context of that culture and the washing of their feet. And that's absolutely nothing that a free man, that's the work for slaves, that's nothing, or servants, that's nothing that a free man would do. And much less a rabbi like Jesus. It's like unthinkable. And he is doing it. And I think that the first one who received that just let it happen because they were like so dizzy with what was happening that they didn't realize it. It was just happening. But then Peter just says, stop, stop, you're not doing this. So imagine telling Jesus, stop, you're not doing this. It's like, I don't really think that he knew that he was the Son of God yet. But he's like, stop, you're not doing it. And Jesus takes the chance to make us see how important this washing of the feet is. He says, if I don't do this, you don't have a part with me. So it's almost, you're not Christian, you're not Catholic, you're nothing that has to do with me if you don't let me do this. And then he understands the weight of that, and then he says, then not just the feet, let the whole body. No, it's not necessary the whole body now, we'll just stay with the feet. And then he washes the feet. And then he washes the feet of the rest of them. And then he says, if I the master, you call me master, and you're right, I am master. And if I the master have washed your feet, so you have to wash the feet of one another. Like, it's part of the context of my commandment is that you love one another. You love one another as I love you. And it's also part of the context that where he tells his father, Father, I beg of you, let them be one in the same way that you and me are one. So it's a context of charity. So now, if it's true that washing the feet is so important that if you don't, you're not a Christian almost, why is it that in my 17 years as a priest and visiting a lot of families, a lot of houses, not once have they washed my feet when I went into those houses? It's like they didn't read the Bible, or what is it? We're doing something wrong. And then, well, I thought, I mean, because also I think you would agree that if you go to a house of a friend of yours, maybe a friend that is also here in this room, and is like, hey, I'm going to wash your feet, you're going to think about it twice if you go again to that house. So what happened to the washing of the feet? And what happened to the washing of the feet is that there must be another interpretation of the washing of the feet. And the other interpretation is very simple. It's when he says, I, the master, wash the feet. And it happens that in our human relationships, when it's a relationship of one-to-one, unless it's a relationship that we just cross our paths in the sidewalk in Manhattan, it's like, okay, there was a visual connection with us, but I'm never going to see this person again in my life. And there are many of those. No, but in a relationship where we have a stable relationship, meaning boss and employee and or employer employee or husband and wife and brother siblings and friends or coworkers, whatever, there's always someone who is stronger than the other at a specific moment. And I'm saying at a specific moment because it can be that in the job, I mean, when you are there, the boss is obviously the stronger, and he makes it feel like the stronger. Just an example, that Diane is the boss of Deb. It's like, did you do what I told you to do? It's like, well, did you do it or didn't you, or did you not? Like you get it here like 10 minutes ago or you're fired. Kind of, no? I mean, she is the stronger, and she makes it pretty obvious that she is the stronger. But when the job is over, and they're back in the streets of Manhattan, and it's the same couple, no, it's Diane and Deb, but Deb knows Kung Fu, and Diane doesn't. So it's like, now it's payback time, you know? So unfortunately, we live in a world that is like that. I mean, that the strong people make it known. And Jesus says that also in the gospel. Like, when he speaks to them to be like children, Or when they ask, who is the greatest among us? And Jesus says, the lords of the world do it so, but among you it must not be so. But the one of you who wants to be the greatest must make himself the servant of all. And so in the washing of the feet, he's just being coherent with what he said before. And it didn't happen once in the gospel. There are many passages in the gospel where you see clearly that that is the intention of Jesus. So it looks more or less like this. Let's take again Diane and Deb. So Diane is the boss. So you cannot just deny, oh no, I'm not the boss. You are. Are you or you are not? Yes, yes, I am. Okay. Like, unfortunately, no, not unfortunately. You're the boss. That's great that you're the boss. Now, you say, I am CEO, Chief Executive Officer. That means that I have executive powers. So you go to Deb and it's like, Deb, I have executive powers. How can I put this executive powers at your service so that you can do your work the way you need it to be done? How can I serve you? And that's possible. I mean, it's a way of being a boss. Lovable. And then when they're back in the street, Deb can say, hey, Diane, listen, I know Kung Fu. So if anyone dares to come close to you with bad intentions, you call me and I will defend you. So I am strong for you. So the whole idea is that you are strong. Jesus created in his ideal creation, he created a world with weak and with strong. And he created the strong for the weak. So it's almost like the weak ones are the ones who are important. Which is beautiful, because at the end of the day, when we live in a world that says, you know, the United States should consider euthanasia, because poor old people, I mean, they're suffering so much. Let's just take them out of their suffering. That phrase sounds like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, no? It's like, let's put them out of their misery. It's like, I need to take those people, like, wake up! You know why, where they're so miserable? Because nobody loves them. Nobody goes and visits them. Nobody makes them feel that they are loved and needed. Because a person that is loved and needed, no matter how much cancer and suffering he's or things he's going through, he takes. Because he knows that there's love in this world. But if you're just, sometimes you just have cold and you want to die. Because nobody loves. Why are we living here if the world is so cold? No, and so those people that have a handicap, those people that are old, those unborn children that probably will be born with some defect or Down syndrome, and all these persons that we just want to annihilate so that we can be happy and that we can have a little bit more money and more time for ourselves. Actually, they are the important ones in this world. They are the ones who are holding this world together. If not, we would all be already in debt, because God is acting in them. It's a world for the weak. It's a world where the strong are for the weak. The weak are important and the weak are sustaining. And that's what Jesus is saying in the Last Supper. And that's why this meditation is so indispensable. Because that is what he is trying to give us as his testament, as his wealth, as what he is giving to us. He's giving us charity. And he is giving us really the seed of revolution. Because revolution is not communism. Revolution is charity. Revolution is charity. The moment in which we start being strong for the weak, then in that moment, things begin to change in a great way. And then, of course, there was another morning of reflection when I spoke about, well, what if you are the weak one and the strong one is not behaving like that? So what if you are victim? What if you are abused? Because abuse, I know, I said it before, abuse is a strong word, and now we just tend to link it with physical abuse, like literally physical abuse or sexual abuse, and so it's like major words to say abuse. But I call abuse only the fact that one person that is stronger uses his strength over someone who is weaker. So takes advantage of that position. That's an abuse. And that's definitely not the plan of God. That's not what God wanted. So, but now, if you are the weak one, welcome to the Passion of the Christ. Welcome to this week of the spiritual exercises. Because this week was made for you. And in one way or the other, we all are in this side. Because yes, we are the strong ones in many relationships, but how often are we just there, exposed to a world of a fallen nature, a world full of ducks? If you remember the example of the ducks. And sometimes we don't know how to deal with that. And we don't know what I told you at the beginning of this week, at the beginning of this meditation, which is the beginning of this week, that our sufferings are not ours, but they are His. And that's something that the people that are suffering should be given the good news of that gospel, that your suffering has been taken by Jesus. And Pope John Paul II wrote a very beautiful document about the suffering. And in his chapter 6 of that suffering, he calls the suffering the gospel of suffering, which means the good news of suffering. It's a little bit a provocation, no? How can you say that it's good news in suffering? But what I told you in the morning of reflection is still true. We don't want to misinterpret my words by as if I were saying, listen, we Catholics are masochists. We just love to suffer. Just give us more of that. And because that's what we eat. That's we just love to suffer. No, suffering is bad. It's a bad thing. It's not something that God wanted. A little bit like what I said about death. Death is bad. Death is not a good thing. Even though some drug dealers and drug dealer culture in Mexico has made the saint death, no? And there are also like this statues of a skeleton with this code, and they worship death. Because the death is holy. It's like, no, the death is no holy. The death is something bad. Of course, it's a blessing in the sense that I told you about. No, if you are 130 years old and you're sick and the death does not come, you just feel that you're a cursed person, that death does not come. It's like you want death to come. But death in itself is not good. And it's the same thing with suffering and abuse. It's bad. And if you are sick, just try to take some medicines. Go to the doctor. Go to physical therapy. Go to a psychologist, a therapist. Try to heal. It's good. But you know this, I mean, we've all experienced this. We can try to do that, but after trying everything, the pain is still there, or the suffering is still there. So what do you do with that? And that's what the good news of the gospel is all about, that Jesus takes that from us. And He really starts taking it hard in Gethsemane. And He is not just suffering physically. It just really comes to this physical. And now we understand better that in the Middle Ages, I guess, or in the Reformation, because we know that there's something that's called psychosomatic, and that many of our physical sufferings start with something that is actually in the soul, and vice versa also. If we are suffering, the soul also takes part of that physical suffering that we are. So they're connected. And so the fact that Jesus is sweating blood means that something is going on in the soul that is very, very painful. And his will is suffering very much. And when we contemplate Jesus in Gethsemane, we have to contemplate his feelings. Why? Because that's part of the objective of our week, of this week of the spiritual exercises. We want to feel that compassion. So just to give you an example, I have no idea what Jesus Christ was feeling in that moment. It's terrible. But I can just approach it to you, and then you can see it with him in your prayer, in your personal prayer. I think he is saying, I am really scared. I am really scared. And no one is here with me. Where's my mother? And he is also saying, I don't want to. I don't want to. And he literally said that, not my will, but your will, but I don't want to. Just hearing saying, I don't want to. It's kind of like, oh, I didn't imagine. It happens, no? All these years I've been with Jesus and I love Jesus, but I've never thought that he would have said in Gethsemane, I don't want to. Because how many times I've said to things, I don't want to. And I don't do it. Because I don't want to. Imagine if he just had not done it. I think this world wouldn't exist anymore. We wouldn't be speaking about it. He's also saying, help! Help! And when we hear this and things that are alike, we can ask Jesus, and I invite you to ask Jesus. You look at him sweating blood and having those sentiments, I don't want to, and I am really scared, I feel lonely. So you ask Jesus, why are you doing it, Lord? If this is the situation, why are you doing it? And just watch his face looking at you and say, because I love you. Because I love you. In a very personal way. Now, this is a moment where I would rather leave this as homework, but this is so powerful that even if it's the Bible, we just have to read this together. If you go to the prophet Isaiah, you all know this passage, but this is the right moment to read this passage. You go to Isaiah 52. Verse 13 and on. See, my servant shall prosper. He shall be raised high and greatly exalted. And just a little pause and about this raised high and greatly exalted. You can think about a king, but you can also think about the crucified Jesus that is exalted and raised high. And you see that by being weak, he is being the best. He is being Christ our King. And connect that to the washing of the feet. He's being exalted because he is being made our servant. Because he is serving us by cleansing us from our sins. That's the washing of the feet that he is doing with us. Even as many were amazed at him, so marred were his features beyond that of mortals, his appearance beyond that of human beings. So shall he startle many nations. And let me make another pause here. Just imagine, I know that this is unpleasant, but just please go through it with me. You're walking in the streets of Manhattan, and you realize that not, for me, feet is a little bit difficult, but not 15 yards away from you in that same sidewalk in Manhattan is coming at you a woman that because of an accident that she had, I don't know, she doesn't have a nose. How do you react? How do you feel? Let me see if I guess that right. You don't feel bad about her. You want to love her and you want to understand and whatever. You just don't have any bad feelings about that woman, but you don't really want to see her. And you don't want to see her because you are afraid that if she sees you seeing her, your eyes will betray something. Your eyes will betray something. And maybe what your eyes will betray is, oh, I wish I never have to go through that. I mean, hopefully that never happens to me. I don't know what would be of me if I were in her situation. But you don't want her to realize that you're thinking about that. But you're afraid that. Now, what I'm saying this is that suffering reshapes in a negative way the human being. If you see something, someone suffering, even if you just hit yourself with a hammer, you just put a face like, ah! But that face is like, well, I don't like that face. Like, you know, because he twisted his features and it's a negative face. It's not a face that he would just greet you. It's like, hello there, how are you? It's like, whoa, what's with that face? But that's a face that we do when we're in pain. And so we are watching this Jesus in suffering, and it's like, I don't want to go through that. We see the cross, it's like, I don't want to go through that. And with that woman that you saw on the sidewalk, you don't know what happened to her. But with Jesus, what happened to her was you. Your sins. He took them. So shall he startle many nations. Kings shall stand speechless, for those who have not been told shall see. Those who have not heard shall ponder it. Who would believe what we have heard? To whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up like a sapling before him, like a shoot from the parched earth. He had no majestic bearing to catch our eye, no beauty to draw us to him. He was spurned and avoided by men, a man of suffering, knowing pain, like one from whom you turned your face, spurned, and we held him in no esteem. Sorry. Yet it was our pain that he bore, our sufferings he endured. We thought of him as stricken, struck down by God and afflicted. But he was pierced for our sins, crushed for our iniquity. He bore the punishment that makes us whole. By his wounds we were healed. We had gone astray like sheep and following our own way, but the Lord laid upon him the guilt of us all. Though harshly treated, he submitted and did not open his mouth, like a lamb led to slaughter, or a sheep silent before shearers. He did not open his mouth. Seized and condemned, he was taken away. Who would have thought any more of his destiny? For he was cut off from the land of the living, struck for the sins of his people. He was giving a grave among the wicked, a burial place for evildoers. Though he had done no wrong, nor was deceit found in his mouth. But it was the Lord's will to crush him with pain by making his life as reparation offering. So let's just stay there for a moment. Of course, there is a message of hope right after, if you continue reading, which is part of the message of the resurrection. But there's some points that I want you to just to feel the awe about what we read. It is amazing, really awesome, awe in the sense of something that is beyond our understanding, something supernatural. It is awesome that someone who is just shall suffer. Because it's not fair. He didn't do anything. Why shall he suffer? And who of us is perfectly just? And we say so much, it's so unfair what is happening to me. It's like, what is that in comparison with this unfair thing that Jesus Christ has to go through? I mean, it just helps me so much when in one of this Holy Shroud events, maybe you've been also to one or more than one, but the expert that was giving us the talk, I don't know if it was a legionary or another expert, but he was saying that if you pierce the nails in the position that Jesus was pierced on, it's super painful. But he said, for Jesus, it was more painful because he was tender as a baby. Because our skin and our muscles get tough because it's part of the rudeness of our soul. But Jesus, he had no defense in that sense. He was perfectly not guilty. So he took the pain as a baby would have taken the pain. Because a baby is not as pure as Jesus was. Because, I don't know, I think we all look at God like he's God. And Jesus, yeah, he's God. He's so strong. He can take everything. And yes, he can. But we forget that he made himself a baby, and he was a baby. He was a child. He made himself fragile, and he took everything that comes with that. And he was just. He was a just person, perfectly just. So it's awesome that a just person should suffer. And it's also awesome, even more, that through suffering, you'll come to the Lordship. It's like that something good shall come out of this. We know our gospel, and we know that something good came out of this. But that's awesome. There's no logic in that either. No one would have believed that, and that's why the prophet asked, who would have believed our witness? It's like, he is suffering unfairly, and something good will come out of this. Something incredibly good. Nowhere in the history of humankind has something better come out of this. That's what it will come out of this. The best thing that ever happened to humanity. It's like, wow. It's like, I can't believe it. It's just amazing. And just one last thing. And with this, we finish this meditation. In the scripture, once before, happened that a just man suffered. It was also a prophecy. And that's Job. It's the book of Job. Now, so there's a lot of understanding in the book of Job, but we're in Gethsemane, right? So let's read a little thing about the book of Job. So to say, the Gethsemane part of the book of Job. I just have to find the book of Job. Oh, here it is. And that's 2, 4 to 5, and then 7 to 8. So chapter 2. Oh well, that's Satan speaking. No, but I'm going to skip that. Let's just start with 2:11. Now, when the three of Job's friends heard of all the misfortune that had come upon him, they set out each one from his own place: Eliphaz from Teman, Bildad from Shu, and so far from Naamath. They met and journeyed together to give him sympathy and comfort. So what are we doing in this meditation about Gethsemane? We are meditating to go to Jesus to give him sympathy and comfort. That's what we're doing. We're doing the same thing that these three friends were trying to do. We're trying to give Jesus sympathy and comfort. But when at a distance they lifted up their eyes and did not recognize him, they began to weep aloud. They tore their cloaks and threw dust into the air over their heads. Then they sat down upon the ground with him 7 days and 7 nights, but none of them spoke a word to him, for they saw how great was his suffering. So we're in a silent retreat for 3 days, and we speak. But these were 7 days and seven nights without saying anything, because they were so in awe of how stricken he was. 7 days and seven nights. Imagine such a pain. Like, I mean, it happens to me in wakes. When you go to a wake and a relative of someone you know dies, and sometimes you know it's very, very painful. And it's like, I don't know what to say. I mean, anything that I say will sound cheap in comparison with the pain that this person is going through. And so imagine that's such a pain, and they feel that they cannot say anything to comfort him because it's terrible, that they choose to be silent just because it was so intense. 7 days and seven nights just with him because it was so intense. I like when I give this meditation before a nightly adoration, because it's like, I can stay here 7 days and seven nights, Jesus. It's like, if that brings you comfort, because you're suffering here for me. 7 days and seven nights. Another thing is that there is something that is alike but not alike about Jesus and Job. Jesus was also surrounded by three of his friends, just like Job. And he picked John, James, and Peter. But the friends of Job, they sat down with him 7 days and seven nights. And John, James, and Peter couldn't stay awake an hour. So Jesus is like in a much worse situation than Job. Like, hey, come on. You're the future of the church. 1 hour. No. You take it alone. In the dark night of the cross, you won't even hear the voice of your Father. That's my hero. I mean, that's my hero, Jesus Christ. And then, one more thing. It's about these three that are coming. I don't know if you got it, but it's like they set out from their places, places that sound they come far away, and they met and then they went together. What does that sound like? The Magi. It's the three friends again. It's the three sons of Noah again. It's almost like saying in the suffering of the just in Job, and of course in Jesus Christ with his three apostles, there's the unity. Humanity comes to unity again. So this suffering in Gethsemane has a meaning. He's not doing it like in vain. He is bringing us together. He is making his testament of charity, of washing the feet of each other. He's making it come true through his prayer. He's showing us what prayer is about bringing the whole humanity together. Okay, now I leave you alone. I'm sorry that it took so long, this meditation, but I put together two.